Thank you for tuning in to the Rescue Mission Podcast, where we talk about real topics that affect real people. Welcome back to the Rescue Mission Podcast. I'm your host, Caroline. I am joined today with my co-host, Blake. Blake, how are you doing? We are so excited. We have three special guests today. We have Adam, Katie, and Logan with us. They're from Community Harvest Food Bank right here in town. If you're from or around Fort Wayne, you have probably heard of the food bank, whether through advertisements, volunteering, through a donation drive. We are so excited to hear about the organization, their roles, and what they do. So I'm going to let Adam take it away, sharing a little bit about his role.
Thank you, guys. My role at Community Harvest, I am the community engagement coordinator. I've had that role for about 3 weeks. Prior to that, I was a volunteer manager for 2.5 years. So I've been there for about going on 3 years now. And my job now is to build bridges in the community, work with people we already know, and meet people that we don't. So it's been a lot of fun so far.
My name is Logan. I'm the Program and Process Improvement Manager at Community Harvest. This job's existed since September of last year, roughly. I basically started with a conversation with our CEO, just kind of saying that the way we go about things could deserve a second look. We're going on our 41st year this year. So we've been doing a lot of good stuff for a while now, but the climate is obviously very different than it used to be, the social climate and just like the needs that we're facing every day. So we wanted someone to kind of spend all of their time just going through and taking a look at the way that we do things and the places that our efforts are going and making sure that we're making the most of what we have and how we do stuff. So that's been my job since September, and it's been eye-opening. It's a lot. There's obviously everybody, I think if you look at all of your opportunities at one time, it can be a bit overwhelming. So I've just been kind of figuring out how to go about it, but it's been fun.
I am Katie Savoy. I am the director of development at the food bank. And so I actually am celebrating my 10th anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Yeah, for sure.
I have been in several positions at the food bank over the years. I started in our agency services and then went into resource development and kind of found my calling in resource development. So I've been there ever since. It's been really rewarding and great to work with these two guys here today. So it's exciting to be here.
Awesome. Thank you for the insight. For listeners that might not actually know about the food bank or resources it offers, how does it serve the community? What are the daily operations of it? What can you share with someone that has no idea? All fingers at you.
At the food bank, we have a lot of different programs. So like Logan said, we are in our 41st year this year. So it's kind of amazing to look back and think that something started as this grassroots organization in the early 80s. We had the closing of International Harvester. We had, you know, record flooding, historical flooding. And so there were so many displaced families, and you know, the community really came together to just help their fellow neighbors in need. And that's really where it got its name, Community Harvest. And everybody helping everybody. And it's grown so much to today. We're distributing almost 12 million pounds a year, when back in 1985, they celebrated their first 1 million pounds distributed.
Wow.
So we have, you know, 10 in-house hunger relief programs. We're serving over 90,000 people a year. There are 1 in 7 people right now are struggling with food insecurity. And so we're there to provide programs and services to people, meeting them where they are in their experiences that they're having right now, and just helping them however we can. And then part of that is, you know, working with different community organizations like the Rescue Mission, like other great organizations, mm-hmm. helping people in many different ways, with shelter, with other pantries, helping with food, all kinds of these needs that we can all kind of partner on and make sure people are served when they need it.
I was going to say, we have programs geared towards children, towards veterans, towards families, towards kind of everybody, really. And so that makes it exciting when people need support. We have most likely have something geared directly towards them, with kind of infrastructure in place to just immediately be able to tell them how to get the help that they need.
What's a misconception you guys hear all the time about either what you do or those you serve that you really wish people knew more about, or just took the time to become aware of?
You can share more than one if
it's like, I can't think of any. Everything's
perfect all the time.
I'll start with one. So in my role as volunteer manager, we had a lot of, I won't say feedback, but it's the first impression that many people get when it's the first time. Is, you know, they see the people in the food pantry, or they see the people receiving it, and a lot of their impression is that they probably don't need to be here, and they know that by a snap judgment. And I'm sure you guys have some sort of element of that here, and you truly never know what somebody's going through, on top of the fact that they could be here on behalf of somebody else. So, I mean, I could be shopping for food for somebody who cannot drive, who cannot walk, who's going through some sort of hardship. And being able to kind of turn that into a teaching moment instead is very valuable. And I understand that it's a very easy conclusion to jump to. I mean, and it's hard sometimes not to make that judgment yourself, but living in it kind of day to day and seeing it every day and just talking to people as they shop in our food pantry and learning what they are going through, you realize that there's a lot that could happen that thankfully has not happened to you most of the time. And there's a lot to learn from it. So it's very cool to turn that into a teaching moment, honestly, and see what that does to people.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't like catchphrases and stuff, but you can't judge a book by its cover at all. And I think this is definitely one of those where, you know, people will have a certain car, or certain clothes or whatever, and people will see them at the food bank and think, you know, like Adam said, that they shouldn't be here. And it's just, you know, we've had people come in where they maybe have a nicer car than you might think, which is an irrelevant judgment to make in the first place. But we find out that that's literally the only thing that they own. And then you think a little bit deeper that they're like, oh, well, they should sell that car and get a cheaper one. But maybe they owe so much on the car that they couldn't sell it for even enough to buy off the rest of that loan. And then where's that? Now they have no money. They have negative money and no car. And it's just, they don't think about these complexities. I think it's easier for people to digest just the more unfortunate aspects of reality if they can just kind of brush them off or make them two-dimensional and not think too much about them. But, you know, we see these people every single day and we talk to them and we get to know them and their families. And we don't have the option of looking at it two-dimensionally. And I think it would be cool if more people kind of put themselves in that position intentionally where having a two-dimensional look at these sorts of complex issues became impossible. So yeah, I mean, it's that. And the other misconception that drives me nuts is when people say that the people who do legitimately like need our services, which is basically everyone that we serve, is that they're lazy for some reason. And they don't think about just the very basic concept of, I mean, everybody knows inflation numbers and stuff, and I've rattled them off so many different times. But I mean, since 2022, inflation had gone up. I think as of last year, it was like 13.8%. Transportation costs were up 24.6%. Food costs were up 20.4%. All this stuff, and wages in Indiana had increased 1.3%. So people who are making it just fine, like 2 years ago, are doing the exact same job, unfortunately getting paid the exact same amount of money, and suddenly just can't afford the exact same lifestyle they had 2 years ago. So yeah, that's just not true. And it makes me upset when people say it. So
couldn't tell at all that it upset you.
There's so many visuals that our audience is missing out on. My hands are in a lot of wild places.
Had Josh Gale of Just Neighbors. He was talking about, was it $200 of what families are away from? Mm-hmm. So you don't know like who's reaching those breaking points and then now utilizing services that weren't there a year ago and those new faces you see. Yeah. And it's just the idea of laziness. I think Blake and I can attest it's, I don't know, easy to assume like our residents are lazy, but there's so many more layers to mm-hmm. why you're homeless and why you're hungry. And
some of those teaching moments include, you know, I could be, and my supervisor's here actually. So if, hypothetically, if I were fired tomorrow, even if
so
I were.
Please don't fire him. Yeah. We really like him.
And if at least wait till this goes live. Yeah,
yeah. And if I were hired at the rescue mission the day after, that could still be, oh, well, it's 2 weeks before I start. And then it's kind of like a training period, light week, pay period, and then another 2 weeks before I'm paid again. So that could be, you know, anywhere between 4 to 8 weeks of low to no income, despite being unemployed for less than a day. And so a lot of our shoppers are here once and maybe never again, or they're here for a few weeks as they kind of work through, you know, they have plenty of hardships. You know, the more kids you have or cars you have, all of these things cost money and time. And when you are, you know, lacking in those from a lack of, you know, income, that can be, you know, a temporary setback. So they're not here every day. And that's kind of another moment that we're able to spin around into a teaching moment, which is nice. And a lot of younger people, they don't know that kind of scenario exists. They haven't had jobs yet. So it's just one of those things.
And to kind of piggyback a little bit off of your $200 comment, I mean, several years ago, there was a big study done and they were talking about how most Americans didn't even have the $400 in the bank to cover an emergency. And think of how much worse off people are financially now compared to several years ago when we didn't have huge inflation problems and probably a looming recession. I think based on all the signs, you know, there's talk of layoffs and who even knows. So, you know, we just have to do the best we can. But to, you know, piggyback a little bit on what Adam and Logan mentioned about, you know, the laziness factor, the I don't understand, you know, so I'm just going to sort of say, well, I don't think they should be here. And, you know, I have heard from people who have friends and they have seen people they know in line. And it's kind of amazing. You have two very different reactions. Some people will say, I had no idea they needed help so badly. And then you also have some folks who are saying, well, I know her. She does fine. She has a good job. I don't know why she needs to be here. But, you know, I like to really use those, like Adam said, as teachable moments, because if I am going to argue with somebody, I'm not going to change your mind by just trying to say, I'm right. And this is, you know, but if you can kind of give some people some examples, and, you know, when Adam mentions just giving those examples where it's easier for someone to put themselves in someone else's shoes, if they just kind of think of things a little bit differently. And, you know, it makes me think of that. My friend down the street doesn't need help, but do you really know? I mean, if you're going through something, you know, private or some kind of personal tragedy, how many people are you really sharing that with? And, you know, nobody knows what goes on in your home. There's people that are going through domestic violence situations, all sorts of different things that they are ashamed to share. They wouldn't even tell their closest friends. So you really just never know.
I was going to say, I come from a credit union background, and most people don't want to talk about or open up about money. I would say that even less want to open up and talk about food, like they don't have the money to buy food, which is such a basic necessity of life for anybody. And so, yeah, to bring it back to Logan's favorite phrase, we can't judge a book by its cover.
But I specifically said I don't like that phrase.
We are going to put that in the title now.
Thank you.
That's, don't judge a book by its cover.
Well, I've left my mark on the episode. That's perfect. Yeah, I was just to throw one more thing on the end of that, which is, you know, we talked about how nobody likes to talk about it. But one thing that I really wish, if anybody can take something away from this, is that people don't like showing up at the food bank. Like, a lot of people like to assume that, you know, people have found the food bank and they just want to use it because it's a free source of food and it's easy. And there's nothing easy about showing up and even without saying a single word, having to admit that you need that sort of support. And I don't know how to convey that to people that have never had to experience that sort of thing. We obviously try to make it so, you know, when people are at the food bank that they feel welcome there, that, you know, they do enjoy it. But there's something about that circumstance that we can't influence that they just simply won't like. So a fun number to throw at people. We have one program called Hope for Heroes that allows military veterans and military widows and widowers and families to access benefits once a month, so up to 12 times a year. And we know for a fact that the average person only uses it 4.5 times a year. So people are not just going in and just using it all of the time and just really like absorbing as much food and taking as much as they can. They're really only doing it when they absolutely have to, because again, no one likes showing up at the food bank. So yeah, that's that.
So how do you think we change that stereotype? Is there any way, or is it just kind of is what it is in that situation?
I mean, I don't have the greatest answer to that. Unfortunately, I mean, I think the economic situation that we're in right now is turning more and more people that thought they'd never be in that situation to services like ours. And that's the fastest way to open people's eyes. It's a horrible and unfortunate circumstance to have to get that across. But I think we're seeing, as far as like the narrative being pervasive and conversations that are happening, I think that we're able to have more frank and honest conversations, because I think more people do get it. And even if they're not driven to services like ours, they're getting closer and they're wanting for things that they're not used to wanting for. And I think just getting closer to the actual issue personally yourself and being able to kind of identify it. And then we like so many issues, we start to see the world kind of turn where the majority of the people get it through personal experience. And then there's this sudden shift where that becomes the popular narrative. And I feel like we're getting there. I wish there was like an easier answer. We're like, no, this sentence just changes everyone's mind. And I finally figured the wording out. And if there is, I don't have that sentence.
If you figure that out, could you send it over to us?
Absolutely.
We deal with that pretty often.
Yeah. You can't judge a book by its cover.
There
it
is.
Read the first chapter at least. But like what Logan said, though, I mean, things have been kind of changing. I think with COVID, it really changed a lot of minds, because all of a sudden overnight, everybody knew somebody or was going through something themselves. And I mean, think of how many thousands of people were just out of work literally overnight. You know, their whole job got shut down. They're placed on furlough. They don't even know what they're going to do for dinner tomorrow because they haven't gone grocery shopping yet for the week. And there's nothing on the shelves, even if they have
no toilet paper if you tried to find it.
Exactly. And I think that in kind of a weird universal way made people understand that, boy, even if you're well off, things can happen and you don't have dinner for tomorrow, or you don't have enough soap to wash your clothes, and all of these different things. And, you know, even going forward to today, you know, we don't talk about, you know, all of the COVID fallout so much, but more economic based, you know, hardships now. But I think, you know, everybody knows that the price of eggs is doubling and tripling, and you can't buy bread anymore for, I mean, it's like $5 a loaf. Yo, you don't even blink at that. It's just the normal price.
It's where I really like to utilize our volunteers and our employees and our supporters as messengers. You know, they've been in the building at least once at this point, and then being able to tell, you know, and I've mentioned it before, like whether it's for yourself or someone, you know, like, you've been here in the building once, that matters, that you can now be that messenger for us to say, like, look, it's really not that bad. You know, it's a little small, you know, and sometimes they don't have a ton of stuff on the shelves, which I'm sure we'll get to that later. But the people up front have worked there for years. They're super nice. One of them speaks a few different languages. So we try to make this very welcoming and very nice. Mm-hmm. And if people have this preconceived notion of what the food bank may be, it's not just getting a box of random food anymore, mm-hmm. you know, that you might be allergic to, your kids won't eat. Like, you can go in there pretty much pick whatever you want. And being able to have that message out there from people who aren't just employees is very helpful and has helped, I think, quite a lot.
Mm-hmm. You just kind of hit on it, but that was kind of my next question. What's maybe a misconception of the food bank itself, or actually Community Harvest, that the community always seems to be coming with? Or it could be the reverse, where you guys used to do something and you've either changed it and are no longer doing it, that the community is unaware of.
Well, sometimes all you have to do is read, you know, social media reviews, you know,
we get it.
You know, oh, all of the food is outdated. All of the food is spoiled. They never have this. They never have that. And it is true. All of these things happen. Sometimes our donations come in and they are right in their prime, and if they are not eaten today or tomorrow, you know, that's when they start to go bad. And sometimes they go bad overnight. They come in, you know, the strawberries are bright and red and beautiful today, and then they look like little marshmallows tomorrow. Like, it, and it's a bummer, and that can happen. And sometimes they do slip through the net, even though we do try our best to make sure it doesn't happen. But seeing those kind of comments where you just know they're not true. You know, I've been told before that by an IT person I used to work with, that he really dislikes the words always and never. You know, my computer never works. It's always crashing. That's actually not true at all. You know, it's less than 1% of the time. So we do our best to make sure that what we are receiving in is checked immediately and checked as the day goes on, if it happens to be on the shelf. All of these things are what we try to do, but it only takes once to set that tone for somebody, unfortunately. And we, you know, we always reach out to try and reconcile that somehow, but that's something we try to stay on top of.
Yeah. To kind of go along with that being that, you know, the perception that the public seems to have, or that seems to be the narrative around there, as far as things that we're maybe doing differently or preconceived notions that we had. I mean, a big part of what I do is kind of examining the way that we used to do things. And a lot of that is kind of gauging where the need is and how it is best addressed. What we're finding are just not where we could have them be or where we would like them to be. And I think a lot of that is, you know, we have a lot of veteran people that work for us that have been doing this for a really long time and have met so many personal connections, and like they have all these ideas, and they get into these habits, and they don't fully appreciate in some of the ways that this is largely shifted when we don't have the correct information in front of us to kind of make us confront that reality. And so that's a lot of what we've been doing. And we're learning that some of these people that have been working here for a very long time are seeing some of this new data, and they're, you know, they have these ideas of, oh, well, this county, it's like this, or it's the worst here, or, you know, that we always get, you know, produce over here as much as we can. And then we actually look at the numbers that we now have that we didn't used to, because we really need to start addressing this stuff. And we're learning that's not accurate. It was maybe 5-6 years ago, maybe it was 4, 5, or 6 years. And that assumption was made on really concrete data at the time. But then, like Kitty mentioned, COVID happened. And I think everyone in the world has been just kind of like moving along since then. And time has become irrelevant. And yesterday feels like 6 years ago. And we're just kind of like taking a deep breath and reassessing, where are we and what are we really doing, and what does the public actually need from us now? And so we're doing a lot of that, just kind of reaching back out and having some conversations we know we've had 1,000 times. We're like, let's have them again, and let's pay a little bit more attention. Or how long has it really been since because maybe it felt like we had this conversation yesterday, but it was 6 years ago. And everyone, I think, has just been kind of trying to make it, and it's leveled off. I'm going to say, I don't think that's an accurate phrase, but we've kind of like established that coming back down to normal, we were all kind of hoping for. I think we all know it's just never going to happen. And so we're learning learning how to deal with this new normal to the point where we can finally start relooking at some of those things again, in internally and the way that we communicate with other partners and stuff. So,
yeah. And for, I think one of the biggest misconceptions that I kind of experience, or, and, you know, we talk about it sometimes at the food bank, but a lot of people will come in for a tour or come to visit or come in for a volunteer day, and they'll have kind of a picture in their mind of what Community Harvest is, but there's a surprising number of people who come and visit and they just say, oh my gosh, I had no idea you have this giant warehouse. I thought it was like, you know, a pantry in a basement someplace. And, you know, it's kind of nice to be able to share that with folks and, you know, help teach people some of those differences between food banking and food pantries and what really we do. You know, people think Community Harvest Food Bank and they think of a direct service pantry. And we do have that. And we have so many other programs, but we also work with over 350 nonprofit member agencies and we serve 9 counties. So when we're talking about cycling through 1 million pounds a month or more from our warehouse, and that goes out into communities all over the area, probably within about an hour of the food bank, I would say. And, you know, letting people see just where all of these resources go, where we're able to take a large delivery of something, for instance, and then share that with so many different people. You know, there's only so many places that you can reach with the programs and the resources that you have. And that's why our member agencies are also so important. So we're not just direct service, but we're also a distribution center of sorts for other nonprofit partners like the Rescue Mission.
Logan, what's your fun fact about the Rescue Mission's agency number?
Oh, it's not my fun fact. We all have it together.
But if it's wrong, then it's on you.
That's fair.
We did a little research and found something fun.
There's a lot of pressure on me right now. So we were curious because I think we overheard in a podcast episode you guys have done that you guys have been around for
a while. They listened to us.
119.
Yes.
We did our research. 119 years, is that right? The Rescue Mission?
Up to 120, going to be 121 soon.
Oh man, is that how math works?
He's like, they didn't listen to the most recent podcast.
Oh, they didn't listen to the first one, and that's it. So yeah, 120, almost 121 years. And so we were kind of curious, like, how far back does our relationship with you guys go? And I guess way back in the day when we first started adding agencies as like permanent affiliations, we just started with like one and worked our way up. And in the words of our most tenured agency associate, we have no idea who 001 is, but 002 is the Rescue Mission.
It's for the OG partners.
That's right.
Yeah. And then it goes back to there was a shift in the way that we kept records a good amount of years ago that kind of led to some of that. That's why 001, we don't necessarily know who it is. But the fact that you guys were clearly in existence with us prior to that shift, there's not a lot of those partners left. And yeah, like Adam said, we got like 350. We've gone through hundreds more that don't exist anymore or have gotten services elsewhere. And so that's pretty cool.
And I think that partnership goes back pretty close to our beginnings too. So we have the official, you know, agency file. But we have the 501c3 that was submitted to us back in 1994. So it's been at least 30 years and probably more. So almost our whole lifetime.
You know, I'm still thinking that was like, that's not that long ago. I'm like, oh, wait, it is.
Yeah. 30 years. Yeah. Not around.
Throwing Copper by Live, the greatest album ever made, came out then.
Yeah, we're just as close to what? 2030 as if you were in 1970, like just thinking through like the shift, because everyone just thinks of the year 2000 as like, oh, and that's what year it is. It's like 2003, right?
Yeah.
It's like 2024 now.
I know.
We're in the 20s, halfway through them, going to be in the 30s soon.
Mm-hmm. I remember first writing the year 2000 on my school papers. We used to have to put the little date
big
in
the
corner, and I just was thinking, wow. It's 2000.
I think my car is a 2010. It's not that old. I'm like, yeah, it is.
But it still runs.
It's a teenager.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm with you, though. I have to try to find out if they still have a cash for clunkers program.
My first car ever was made the same year that I was born. And like, I don't even want to know what bottom of a pile junkyard that car is in right now.
Well, those old ones, though, they last forever.
It's not probably my car.
Still making the same.
They make
back in my day.
My first car was a Pontiac. It is Ooh. Very, very dead.
That brand doesn't even exist anymore.
It really doesn't.
It doesn't?
No.
Dang.
Saturn, too. But we actually, saw one in a parking lot just the other day. Somebody had a Saturn, and it looked like it could have come out 5 years ago. It was in beautiful condition.
Awesome.
That car looks better than mine.
That car looks better than me.
Well, getting back to you guys in Community Harvest, what's maybe something you guys are looking forward to? What's the future for Community Harvest? What should our community be looking forward to from you guys in the next couple of years?
Oh, boy.
How about right around the corner?
So I'll bring it in a little bit to the more immediate future and then let the other two talk about the future. We did start a new initiative that we're calling Grow a Row. In fact, we've given seeds to the rescue mission. They came in. I think it was Rusty came in.
Dusty.
Sorry.
I like Rusty, though. I'm going to start calling him that.
Oh, man. That's on record now. Yeah. But no, they came in and got some seeds. We've given some to a few other organizations, but mostly we've been distributing them to the individual and the people who have a desire to either start gardening or are, you know, I almost said professional gardeners, but that's kind of a weird thing to say. No, more tenured experience. They know what they're doing. And if they have a 5-gallon bucket on the front patio or a whole farm, you know, whatever they want to do, if we're able to give them seeds and they can grow these produce plants for us, they eat what they want. They give away what they want, but we get the excess. A lot of people don't know we will accept homegrown donations of produce. So anything that you can grow, we will take, especially some of the more obscure fruits and vegetables. So we have a lot of different cultures that come in. They may not all be, you know, potato eaters like myself. So I mean, hotter peppers, more exotic fruit, if they have a greenhouse or something to support some more citrus and all these kinds of things. But right now we are mailing seeds to people. They can come in and get them. They can, especially this time of year, it's kind of the perfect time to start doing it. But we just ask that anything that they have in excess, they can bring to us. And by name itself, if they plant their garden as planned and then plant one extra row for the food bank, then that's kind of what we're going for. And it helps. It ties back a tiny bit to all the COVID discussion we had a bit ago, where if there is supply chain issue or as a result of some of these things that these companies went through, they are better at forecasting and predicting and all of these things. So they have less excess to give. And this kind of helps as they get more efficient business-wise, which is great for them and zero waste for them and all that's great. But we're kind of meeting in the middle where then there's less for us to receive from our corporate donors. And this kind of helped cover that gap a little bit. So that's been fun to plan. It's in its second year, learning a lot already. And the next year we hope to have even more, to have it be fun and get some schools involved and everybody involved. And I think you guys have a rooftop garden.
Yep, right down here. I was going to say, you guys will be able to
see it. Yeah. I would say, and I think the seeds that you guys got, that Dusty got.
Rusty got?
Rusty does. Yeah, I think there's plans for those seeds at a different location that you guys have to be growing like acreage, I think. I forget what it was called.
The new Kara's house, probably.
Oh, yes.
That sounds right.
I much knew about that. Yes.
In the know. But yeah, that's kind of the new thing that we're working on right now.
We've even got some seedlings starting at the food bank. We just had a little strawberry pop up today.
Oh, I know. Awesome. Yeah, our first little baby plant. And yeah, so, you know, Logan also loves puns as much as he loves old phrases, but we're hoping that it sprouts into something fun and flowers into something beautiful. I know.
It's so corny.
I know.
Awesome.
You gave me corn to grow yesterday. I have a right to those puns.
He'll turn over a new leaf soon, though. Don't worry.
You guys are going to be just two guests from here on out, right?
That's going to kale him.
Fill him up from his head to my toes.
Jokes. Let us move on.
Yeah.
It's everyone except me. I'm alone. This is the most alone I have ever felt.
But going forward, that's all well and fun, but the food bank also has a second building most people don't know exists. I know Logan's been working on that, and then even bigger, brighter future things planned that Katie can run with that.
Yeah. I mean, like the North building's a big part of it. I can't go into a lot of detail because that detail doesn't exist. We were donated to the old Azar's commissary building back in like 2007.
I think so. 2007 or 2009, but now that you're asking, I don't know the answer.
Well, I wasn't there at the time.
Right in between.
Yeah, let's just shoot in between the two.
I get a free excuse to not know. I'm still. So essentially, we're just reevaluating what we might be able to do with that building. And it's kind of like we're in the no wrong answer, throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks right now. We have a couple things that we're working towards. I won't speak to those right now because my CEO will get mad at me. But no, a big part of what I'm trying to incorporate into that thought process and kind of what I'm most excited about outside of this building building, which is neat because my office is really cool looking. It's just like connecting with the public and other organizations and nonprofits and even for-profit industries and retailers and stuff in new thought-provoking ways. Obviously, it's cool and fun for us to go through those motions and to kind of create some new systems and you know, come out and do things. And maybe we'll have our podcast of our own one day and we'll have podcast fights and it'll be great.
Rescue Mission is number one guest.
Yeah. But I'm excited to kind of show what sort of creative avenues people can have when it comes to partnerships, that even if we're not a part of them, one of the things that we've done a couple times, and I have actually got a meeting tomorrow for the next chapter of it. We've got a collaboration beer series called Grains of Hope. So we did a beer with Two Toms last September. We did another beer with the Hobby Gnome or Gnome Town at the time on the landing in January. And so we're going to go out to E-Brewing in Huntington and talk to them, kind of figure out when we can get them on the calendar. But essentially we work with them. We generate a brand new beer that's never been made before. A portion of those sales go back to Community Harvest, and we put them all under the label Grains of Hope. Graphic artist Kaylee Snodgrass made us a really, really cool label that we put on all of the cans and stuff, and you can get them at grocery stores sometimes. So it's been a lot of fun, and I kind of hope that we can kind of get this going and normalize it for local breweries, and that other nonprofits can jump in and say, hey, I saw that you did this with Community Harvest. Can we do one? And it would be cool if we could keep everything under the banner of Grains of Hope, so it can kind of all have this like flagship identity. But Community Harvest doesn't need to be involved after we kind of get it going. As long as I get credit for all of it, that's fine. So we have that, but you know, we have lots of different ways that the public has gotten involved with us, and that we, you know, we're trying to kind of go out and talk to other people. I mean, I could go on with lots of different examples. I just don't want to like monopolize the rest of the podcast. So if you want to talk about Abigail's bags, but that's kind of what I'm most excited about, is just these sorts of discussions and kind of reinvigorating that conversation of like, how can we partner with the public in general, with the community in general, and other organizations? And there really are no wrong answers. Like, I would love to have all of the conversations that people want to have and figure out what we can do together. I'm not terribly concerned with what that looks like right away. So,
well, actually, you know, we were talking, and it's kind of amazing when you really get into the details, how many different opportunities we have to get involved and to do something to help the community. Whether you want to spend a lot of time and volunteer at the food bank, whether you want to donate, or whether, you know, there's some pretty creative stuff that we've been doing. I mean, if you garden, hey, there's a way you can help the food bank just doing your normal hobby. And, you know, it's really neat how many different opportunities we have to get involved in helping the community and partnering with the food bank as another nonprofit, or, you know, anything. We always talk about time, talent, and treasure, and how can you contribute? I mean, you can add us to your Kroger Community Rewards card and just do your normal grocery shopping, and a percentage or two will be given to us as a donation. You can do as much or as little as you like. And there's just so many things you can do to help, like the Totes of Hope. And Logan, I know that, you know, you kind of were involved in that, and Adam, and I don't know if one of you wanted to talk a little bit more about that, because it's pretty cool.
So I'll touch on that a bit. We have a couple of programs at the food bank that use brown paper grocery bags. And the ones that we use for our senior citizen program, a lot of these bags are given to low-income seniors who might be shut in, or even if they're not, you know, a little limited on how mobile they are physically or with the ability to drive. So these bags are filled with food from the state of Indiana, and they are distributed once a month, every month for a year. And upon that time, they recertify, the people do. But instead of giving them just these plain brown paper bags, we invite literally anybody. It's usually kids. I should say it's most often kids, but we've had people in their 80s and 90s do this to decorate the bags. Whether that is, you know, scribble art by toddlers, we've had handwriting practice from kindergarten teachers. So it's just a bag with lowercase A's. That's just the whole bag. The group from, I forget what church it is, but they are a group of 80 to 90 year old ladies who paint them. So we have these really kind of like outstanding, and some are kind of, you know, they're floral, or they are, you know, the bowl of fruit kind of painting, but they also paint all sorts of cartoons on there, which I guess I'm not totally shocked
they're
by.
Awesome.
I didn't expect to see, like, you know, a chicken pulling a worm out of the ground, or Garfield throwing a ball, eating lasagna, I guess not throwing it. But our goal is to have them all decorated. And it's a really great activity to do at home or at your schoolroom or Sunday school or wherever. Super mobile. You can take it offsite and do it. And it's great for teachers who are looking to fill, you know, like a 5-minute gap in the schedule, and they just want these kids to be busy for a minute. They throw them a bag and they bring them into us, or we'll go and pick them up sometimes too. But we've had a lot of schools involved, and it all started with a girl named Abigail from New Haven Elementary School at the time who wanted to do it. And then she did it, and it was kind of her idea as far as I can understand. And then her class got involved and her school got involved, and it's just kind of rippled out to all these different community groups. And now we have them decorated almost the time.
Now we have a bag of the month.
Yeah, we've got a cool little wall up by where we work where we have the bags of the month display. We just finished. We actually had Abigail come back in so we could kind of show her what her small gesture, how many years ago was it?
Oh gosh, it's a few, I think.
Yeah, so we brought her back in so she could kind of see how big that's gotten, and she got to see the wall with the 12 bags of the month, and she got to pick the first bag of the year, and that's something we're going to kind of keep going. But what I obviously, it's really cool because a lot of these, like Adam was saying, a lot of these seniors don't really see much of anybody. Sometimes these volunteer drivers that are bringing them these bags are the only people they'll regularly see at all. And so to just have like some of these bags, some of them have like hopeful messages written on them, or sometimes it is just a goofy cartoon. I don't think people fully appreciate like the impact that these sorts of things have in a lot of our clients' lives. And what I like most about this program is that it really shows that you might think like, oh, I'm just coloring a bag and it's not that big of a deal. And sometimes people will have that thought that they want to do it, and they will convince themselves that it's not a big deal, and that they'll talk themselves out of actually doing it. And when it comes to kind of looking at what these partnerships look like or what these different contributions could look like, I can't encourage people enough to just like, don't do that. Don't assume that the value isn't enough or that we won't appreciate it or the public won't appreciate it, because whether it's money, whether it's food, every little bit helps. And that includes just like time and care, because Abigail didn't give us food and she didn't give us money. She just brought some art and like a big smile and a very big personality. And that's really changed a lot of people's lives in a way that I don't think a lot of people fully understand, like how big of a difference that kind of stuff means. So if all you have is like enthusiasm and a want to do good, that's all you really need. You can come out to the food bank and we'll find a way to turn it into something. It just, every little bit helps, every personality helps. And if we all come together, we can do some pretty awesome stuff.
It's a great way to get families involved. And just about, and other nonprofits have seen that, and they have their own version of kind of a blank canvas, if you will. And they're like, I don't know how many 6-year-olds could volunteer at the rescue mission, but they could absolutely go home and do this. And then it turns around and helps you guys deliver something or something like that.
Kind of to wind, you kind of touched on it, time. For those that want to get involved and volunteer, where do they go? What are a couple ways they can volunteer? Just someone's never done before.
Yeah, the easiest way is, of course, to go online. They can also call in if they want to. Anybody 5 and older can volunteer. Just about every county that we have has something that families can do together, either as an individual, small group, or even a large group. And we've had as many as 60 people in a group before. It was a lot. Not sure I would exactly.
We can't afford 40.
That might be for the new volunteer manager to decide. It was fun. Don't get me wrong. It was a lot of fun. It was just a lot. And they were all 4th and 5th graders. So
that would be tiring.
They have a small army of teachers and parents too. Very well behaved. Everything worked out great, but it's nothing like opening that door and just seeing like, close to 60 kids all walking into and they just didn't stop. So it was just like, oh my gosh, they're still coming. But it was a lot of fun. But going online, you can see our entire calendar of all 9 counties of all events that we do. Okay. I highly, highly, highly recommend the what we call farm wagons. They are food distributions where the public shows up, get free food. There's no sign up, no ID, no anything like that. They just come and get the food. And it's a lot of fun. You're very hands-on. If you can handle being outside, because they're almost all outside, a great way to spend an hour to help put food in people's cars. The kids make it worth it when you see them in the cars, the seniors. It's kind of a powerful moment to see and to share. So I always like to encourage people to join those. Also at our food pantry. So if you're a little more into details, you like organizing, you like stocking, you like the kind of the customer service, if you will, that's a great opportunity too. It's also inside. So a lot of people really like that part. And I always like to ask the question, if you like organizing, raise your hand. And they're usually a little bashful about it, but I'm like, great, you 3 come with me and we're going to the store. And the other ones, we're going to go do this or that. So there's a lot of cool things we can do. We're in 9 counties, so you don't have to drive all the way to Fort Wayne. If you are in Fort Wayne, don't want to drive all the way to the south of Fort Wayne. We have places throughout the central and north as well that they can kind of touch on too.
Yeah. And it's just a great place to come see, mm-hmm. You don't really know what to expect without going there first. You might not know what it looks like or what the people are like there. There are so many people just waiting to give you a tour. If you want to come see the food bank, we are happy to show you the place. And yeah. I know Logan looks really excited about giving a bunch of tours.
Dude, I love giving tours.
It's your favorite thing.
I do like giving tours. It's a little bit of a goofy time if I'm the one giving the tour.
Actually, so we have sort of a menu. We have the more serious tours. We've got the Logan tours.
Yeah, we have the tours of no consequence. The Logan goes down to
the food bank. The guests are like, ask for the Logan tour.
They're like, I don't think Benjamin Franklin did ever come here. But like, oh, actually.
He did. You're wrong.
No, yeah, you're wrong. Yeah.
Oh, I know we said we were found in the 80s, but we actually meant like.
One of us works for the food bank and the other one just showed up today. So I don't know.
Cornerstone was at Plymouth Rock.
That's right.
But it's true. I mean, when you get to see just the mission in action, and I don't know, it's one thing to talk about it on a podcast or even show a picture or send out a newsletter or something. But when you're able to really interact with the people who are receiving help, if you're a donor, I mean, this is where your dollars are supporting people, and you can see it in action in person and see the effect you're having. Or if you're coloring bags, you can see the bags ready to be delivered to someone's home. And it's just such a great opportunity to really connect with the mission of hunger relief and all of the different things that, you know, really your support is helping us do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of heroes in the community that nobody will ever meet or know who they are. They're just people who wanted to do something to make a difference. And there's thousands of people benefiting from a creative idea or, you know, just some kind of contribution. Maybe you go in your cupboard and you've got some extra peanut butter. Mm-hmm. You know what? I mean, that would mean so much to somebody who cannot put food in their pantry to have that jar of peanut butter that, you know, I'm just like, I can't eat this before it's, you know, use by date. I'll donate it and it will benefit somebody so much. And it's really a gift to be able to connect that with people who come to see us. And, you know, if you can go there and meet the staff, everybody there has a heart for what they do and they have a heart for the people that we serve. And it's a really good experience. So I would highly recommend anybody, if you're curious, just come visit and let us show you what we do.
Yeah. I think there's opportunities that are not immediately apparent. I think when people think about wanting to give back, whether it's their organization or as an individual, they think either money or food. And if, you know, if you're like a smaller organization or you're publicly funded or you're not a nonprofit and you just don't have funds to throw around and you don't have food laying around, a less thought about avenue is just do a food drive then. Like if you want to help, it's like generate food. Like you can call and you can talk to a guy named Don Terry, or you can show up on a tour and I can just walk you straight to his desk and walk away. But no, I mean, like some of our best food drives are at that. It was those organizations that would never be in a position to donate food or money. Like public schools have some of the best food drive outcomes that we have of any organization. So there's a lot of different ways to get involved, a lot of different ways to help. And if you know you want to help, but you have no idea how, just ask, like just show up. We'll talk to you. There's really no like formal process you have to go through. We'll just hang out. Or I'll just hang. I'm not trying to volunteer anybody else's time, but I will.
Just request the Logan tour.
Just request the Logan tour. It really is a fun time. I feel like we're making a lot of jokes, but guys, I have a lot of fun giving tours.
I do too.
There will be at least 4 puns on the tour.
Not when I give it.
That's the Katie tour or the Adams.
We're not judging the book by its cover.
We're going to rate every tour we go on.
Do it. Oh, I'm going to win. I'm going to win this.
Well, I learned a lot today. I learned not to judge a book by its cover. I don't know who else learned that. That was my takeaway.
That is going to be the podcast title.
And remember,
right?
Logan said that.
It's really unfortunate, but it's true. And I wish it wasn't, but
it really is.
It
should be quoted. Don't judge a book by its cover. Logan Halfway.
It'll be great. Where's your headshot for and everything? But Logan, Kate, and Adam, thank you for coming on, your time, and thank you for sharing everything that Community Harvest Food Bank is doing in the community and all the hard work you're doing. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for everything.
Thank you for tuning in to the Rescue Mission Podcast. Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.